Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest segment of society. To those who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, counterproductive, and cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to discuss any of these topics anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-376-45. Big news yesterday from the Episcopal Diocese of Maryland. They had a bishop. Her name is Suffragan Heather Cook. She is said to have been big-hearted, very compassionate, a very nice lady. Well, she was driving a car that hit a 41-year-old man, Tom Palermo, on Sunday afternoon, ran him over. Palermo died at a nearby hospital. This witch of a bishop fled the scene. Listen, accidents can happen when you're driving. This woman had a tendency to find trouble because she was an addict. She had alcohol issues, she had drug issues, she had been arrested for both previously. I don't know what her blood alcohol level was at the time. But she committed an act of murder when she, with her irresponsible lifestyle, got behind the wheel of that car, ran a man over, and rather than helping him, fled the scene. It is a story mainly because this woman is a bishop in the Episcopal Church, which is Catholicism light. Somebody has made some very bad judgments along the way, and there's some genuine hypocrites among us. There's a story out of San Francisco that the Los Angeles Police Department released an autopsy Monday on a young black man who was shot during a confrontation with the police. The confrontation took place back in August. I reported on this attack in August. And I reported on it because the young man was mentally handicapped and the police harassed him before killing him. For months, demonstrators in Los Angeles have been demanding the release of the autopsy of Ezel Ford, which police say they were keeping sealed while searching for more witnesses. You know, police are not only murderers and mass murderers by the number of people they kill, but just as the Roman Catholic Church has been running cover for pedophiles for many decades now, police departments are running cover for their murderers. It is way past time that in a country that considers itself free, in a country that is devoted, allegedly, to a free press, that secrets like this not be held, that they be released in a timely fashion. The public has a right to know. Now, I understand that if it's a private citizen, there have to be some restraints on the release of information like this. But this is a man who was killed by somebody under the public's employ. The public had licensed him to carry and use a firearm. The public had authorized this man, had trained this man, had paid this man, and therefore this man's behavior has to fall on an entirely different scale when evaluating whether or not information is released. The 25-year-old mentally handicapped boy, black young man, was shot when he allegedly tried to take the officer's gun, according to the police. That is their fallback excuse. They use it all of the time. It was a lie in this case. It is usually a lie. The autopsy shows that Ford was hit 3 times at close range, 2 fatal shots in his right side and another shot in his back. A 3rd shot struck his arm. The officer's account is of a violent struggle where one officer ended up on his back with Ford on top of him and Mr. Ford in control of his pistol, said the Los Angeles police chief. The officer drew back up and reached for his gun and shot the man. Ford was described by his family as bipolar and schizophrenic. A witness contradicts the police depiction of the struggle. The witness said, no, it's not what happened at all. The young man put his hands up, and they wrestled him to the ground. Now, this happens all the time. Police are way too aggressive. They're way too violent. It's way past time that we stop supporting them. This young man put his hands up when he was asked to do so, and the police wrestled him to the ground. A shot went off, and then they shot him again. And then they shot him once more. Ford's family has filed a million-dollar, multi-million-dollar wrongful death suit against the Los Angeles Police Department. The suit claims that the police officers were familiar with the young man's mental handicap and knew that he was mentally ill. They knew that this man was unarmed. They knew that he was basically helpless and harmless, and yet they proceeded to attack him and throw him to the ground and then shoot and kill him. And while the act of murder, particularly against a defenseless young man like this, a mentally handicapped young man, is inexcusable and reprehensible, the most disgusting thing is the Los Angeles Police Department collectively lying about how this occurred, covering up their crime. It's the only thing worse than priestly pedophilia in the Roman Catholic Church. The cover-up. The autopsy is one element to be used in three separate investigations now underway. The two officers involved, both veterans of the gang squad, have been taken off duty. Sad, huh? And it's everywhere. It's pervasive. Dateline is Manchester, England. It begins, everyone at the Islamic Center knows of parents who tried to rescue their daughters after girls have run away to join the Islamic State. You see, in Islam, even though women are treated like rubbish, there is a longing of Muslim women to be accepted, to belong. And so Islamic women will go off and sacrifice their bodies as jihad bait, as jihad rewards. They're lured into doing so over the internet, and their religion, which condones the surrender and submission of a woman and the complete capitulation of her body to a man's control, they do so under the guise that they're pleasing their disturbed and demonic God. In this case, the parents are Ibrahim, Helene, and Kondra, who are immigrants from Somalia. Why in the world? England would allow immigrants from Somalia is it's a great question. Why bring the disease of Islam into England? It needs to be quarantined. Well, they followed their daughters to Turkey. The wife ventured into Syria after them. She was arrested by the militants. She was detained for more than 5 weeks. The parents came back empty-handed. Their 17-year-old daughters were already, and let's not put this in quotes, it's in this article, it's not even in quotes, married off to jihadists. They're not married. There's no concept of marriage in Islam. In Islam, you can have as many wives as you want. Yes, it is officially limited to four, but the fourth position is rotating. In other words, you can have a wife for a day and pick another one the following day. It's how they engage in prostitution. They aren't married. They're offered as sexual rewards to jihadists. We'll continue this story in a moment. We have one of my favorite callers on the line, Nick, calling in from Wisconsin, who has a question on the the Torah. One said to, I think, contrast it to the Quran. Hello, Nick.
Hello. The questions, I don't often have questions anymore, but once mm-hmm. in a while I come across people who do have questions, and mm-hmm. I just happen to have the same one then.
Okay.
And there's a guy who wants to know if there's anything in Torah that is says that have anything to do with pedophilia, whether it's permitted or if I don't think it is, but or does it? What does
yeah, there's it, a yeah, there's a right, there's a whole section in the Torah of it's probably I guess approximately 30 to 40 statements, and in that a group of statements, virtually every form of sexual perversion is condemned. Yahweh says, don't have sex with your children, pedophilia. Don't have sex with your parents, incest. Don't have sex with animals, bestiality. You know, it goes down all of the various, yeah, all of the various forms of sexual perversion. And it lists them all.
But pedophilia does not end up sex with you children, with sex with you children.
With sex with a child.
What about
yeah.
sex with other people, children?
Does yeah, I don't know if there is a distinction between sex with your children and sex with other people's children, but it's pretty clear from the context, and I'll be glad to. Look up the each of the Hebrew words and expound on them for you, but it's pretty clear that that any form of sex outside of a loving monogamous marriage is discouraged, and that sex with children, animals, and family members is condemned. We'll be back with Nick and with Shattering This after the commercial break. Shattering This for every conversation with Nick regarding sexual acts that are prohibited in the Torah by prohibited. I was saying this is seriously wrong. Do not do it. There'll be a consequence of your ongoing practice of these things. Homosexuality, Nick has listed in Kara Leviticus 18 and Kara Leviticus 20. Committing adultery is listed in Kara Leviticus 20. Lying about virginity is listed in Dividing Words, Deuteronomy 22. Being the daughter of a priest and practicing prostitution, so being engaged in prostitution, is Kara Leviticus 21. And then having sex with a female virgin, Dibadim 22:25. The Hebrew word for virgin and the Hebrew word for young girl are really similar. And sometimes the only difference is in the Masoretic pointing. And so that would cover men having sex with children, and it is it's expressly prohibited.
Mm-hmm. Well, that answers my question.
Yeah, there's others, by the way. It's repeated. You've got a male practicing bestiality, Kara Leviticus 20. A female practicing bestiality is condemned in the next statement. Having sex with your father's wife, Kara Leviticus 20. That would be a form of incest. Having sex with your daughter-in-law, Kara Leviticus 20. Having incestual sex of any kind, Kara Leviticus 20:17. Marrying a woman and her daughter, Kara Leviticus. I guess there's some weird dudes out there. Sorry for laughing, but I mean, how do you go up to a woman and say, you know, I think you're really cute and I like you a lot. I'd like to marry you, but only if it's a package deal and I can have your daughter as well. Yeah, I guess Woody Allen comes to mind.
Mm.
So that's
that answers my question. I just wanted to get back to that guy and tell him everything I learned so far. But I'll listen to you off.
All right. And just one last thought, Nick, and then we're going to go to Glenn. He's also on the line here. Is that the when it comes to sex? Yahweh has actually very little to say about it. And I just listed a bunch of things. You might say, well, that's a lot. Well, you know, the Torah's standard print style is well over 1,000 pages. And Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, well over 1,000 pages. And this discussion appears basically in two chapters of two books. One chapter each of two different books, Devarim and Kara Leviticus. And so... Yeah, you get a list of things. This is improper, and he goes on. You know, Yahweh doesn't have a lot to say about the kinds of things that Christians in particular, puritanical Christians, have conniptions fits over because of Paul's writings, which is, you know, having an intimate relationship with between boys and girls and condemning every form of sexuality as they wish to do. From God's perspective, as I read his instructions, he made us such that we would find one another attractive, and that sensuality and sexuality are part of the design. And so you won't find Yahweh saying much about it, other than he strongly encourages that we engage in monogamous marriage relationships and raise our children to be part of the covenant.
Okay.
Hello, Glenn. How are you?
All right. Thanks. I am in there.
Good. That's quite a transition from police violence and killing mentally handicapped children to bestiality and pedophilia, but
violence. It's what TV's about mostly, right? Sex and violence.
Yeah, but you know, realistically, we were actually in a story about Islam and of Islamic girl, 17-year-old, offering themselves up as jihad prizes to the Mujahideen in Syria. So it really wasn't much of a of a jump in that regard. Islam, the prophet of Islam was a rapist, and he was a pedophile. So it's wasn't
logically
a stretch at all.
Congruent.
Logically congruent. We will return with your comment. I understand you want to talk about police violence, and I'd love to hear your thoughts and views on it. Can you give us a few minutes through the commercial break, and we'll be back with you at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Glenn, I think you wanted to make a point regarding police violence in the wake of the story that I shared about the divergent views as to how the mentally handicapped young man was shot and killed in Los Angeles.
Well, actually, it's going to go a little more general than that. When you're talking about this, you know, whether you're talking about the wars, proxy wars, Islam, police, all this stuff, what went through my mind was, as in the days of Noah, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And the days of Noah were characterized by the whole earth being filled with violence. You know, people go back to Genesis 6, and they start talking about Nephilim and Anakim and aliens and intermarriage and all this stuff. But the greater overarching point is that the whole earth was filled with violence. And like every day, just, and we ain't seen nothing yet as regards this.
Correct.
Every day 150,000 people die worldwide, and every day 350,000 babies are born. There's a net increase in the human population of 200,000 people every day. And, you know, as this violence increases, that 150,000 people dying daily is going to go up precipitously. You know, so, you know, people, and as vexing as it can be when you see these behaviors, and it's certainly moral to decry this and to call for, better behavior, it's unlikely to occur, in my opinion, and indeed just the opposite is likely, and we're like, you know, the whole earth will be filled with violence. And that's, you know, we know this, you know, as things progress.
There's a lot of things. You know, yeah. Glenn, your point is really well taken, that we are returning to the time in terms of human behavior and the violence of it, the religiosity of it, the abuse of humans upon humans, the proliferation of widespread deceit. We're returning to a situation that's probably worse than what was experienced during the time of Noah. And we may already be worse and heading to a probably a geometric increase.
Yeah.
Of the level of violence that we are currently, and inhumanity that we are witnessing currently. And it is correct that there is no way to stop it. You can see the trend line, and there is no one even making an attempt to stop it. And I don't think you're misreading what I'm doing by decrying single acts and collective acts of violence. I'm not foolish enough to think that I'm going to have an influence on America's judicial system, America's police, America's military, America's turn to the dark side as it relates to violence. But I think it's still worthwhile to expose and condemn it and get as many people as possible to wake up to realize what's happening and to choose to make better choices individually.
Right. And in a world of people with ever diminishing capacities for reason and logic and judgment, you know, you can only, you know, it doesn't paint a pretty picture. You try to reason with people incapable of reasoning, and they're just going to make, you know, bad conclusions and wrong judgments.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's no question that if you go back a couple of thousand years ago, Rome was an extraordinarily violent place. And Rome was a violent place with extreme perversion. And the Romans were not just violent, they were perverse. And they celebrated violence in their Colosseum and their amphitheaters around the empire. I mean, Rome was just repulsive in this regard. And so it's not something that we're, you know, humankind hasn't had a long history of this. If you look at the Roman Catholic Church and their perpetration of violence through implements of torture and how long they did it and how severe they were in the imposition of torture, now, this is not new. If you look at Islam's initial rise nearly 1,400 years ago, for the first 100 years of Islam, there was no more violent institution on the planet. You'd have to look long and hard to find a individual more violent than Tamerlane. You know, this mix of Muslim with the Mongolian hordes. So we've been violent for a long time, but I think we have escalated. You know, if you look at mankind's ability with particularly America's weapons to perpetrate mass killings. You know, we've killed more people in the last 150 years than probably have died in all wars and all violence in the 2,000 years prior to that.
Right. Well, I mean, when you look at the increase in the population, the increase in population density, the dependence mm-hmm. of the population on our House right. of Cards infrastructure, you start to compromise, if the infrastructure gets compromised, electricity goes out is a big thing these days. You talk about EMPs or something. I mean, you know, we're just the New Orleans, you know, the New Orleans situation was a great illustration of how bad things can get, how quickly, you know, with the hurricane and all that sort of thing. You turn off the electricity, you know, for a couple of weeks in a densely populated American city, mm-hmm. and you've got, you know, this is why we have the zombie movies, you know.
Right.
You know, the people, the veneer of civilization, the civility is very thin.
Right.
And peel it back, and you've got barbarism.
Right. Right. There's going to be death from many different causes, and the death from natural causes is not something that mankind is going to be able to do much about. I mean, there's going to be massive tsunamis, massive hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, and an asteroid strike, all of which are going to kill enormous numbers of people. And there's not much mankind can do about those things. But mankind is going to perpetrate horrific wars, and those wars are going to be responsible for most of the deaths, I think, that we're going to see over the next 15 years. And they're all by choice.
With war comes privation and disease, too.
That's true.
Typhus and all that sort of thing. So we'll see. And with bioweapons, do that next. You know.
Right. Yeah, inhumane treatment. You know, if you look at World War One, the most inhumane act associated with World War One was actually when the Ottoman Turks came back after losing battles to the Russians under the Tsars, and they came back through the Armenian Christian community. They took out their vengeance on them and killed probably 2.5 million of them, starving them to death, torturing them to death, raping them to death. And so wars do create the kind of environments where you see enormous cruelty. You look at the Japanese, what they did not only in China, but what they did in the Philippines and what they did to Americans.
Sure.
You know,
the Tom Death March and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't want to flog a dead horse, pun intended. But we ain't seen nothing yet, and we think we're invulnerable. We just think that we're going to just go out for pizza and everything's going to be fine. And what's worse?
Right. People have this tendency to believe that because yesterday was okay for me. And the day before that was okay for me, and today looks like it's going to be okay for me. But I can't imagine a day where where the police and the military are actually attacking me, where they're taking away my liberty, where I have ignored the trends to the point where they're now completely out of control, and they're in my face. They're curtailing my freedom. They're curtailing the lives of those that I love. And it's very difficult for people to project themselves into that reality. When all the trends are showing that's exactly where we're going, and it's unstoppable. Of course, all the prophetic testimony tells us that's where we're going as well.
And
most people are unwilling to accept
it. And again, there's sort of the normalcy bias. And then there comes that oops moment where you realize what you're in your ignorance and foolishness. Like those girls who went off, to those jihadists, there was that oops moment where they went, what have I done? And then the full force of it, comes upon them.
Right. And then all they have left from that point on is the Stockholm Syndrome. To view moments where they're not being gang raped, to be in moments where they're not being abused as a reprieve and mercy. That's all they have to look forward to now the rest of their lives, however short they're going to be, is the Stockholm moment.
I think that's an adaptation alternative, an adaptive alternative to despair and suicide. You have no choice but to love your captors. Yeah, that's amazing. And like I say, we'll have that oops moment when we realize, we've got, so many things about which we've been negligent and presumptuous. And when this stuff starts to come hit the fan, and we'll be like, oops, and it's still not taking responsibility for what we've done.
Yeah, here's some great examples. You look at when Edward Snowden released the information that America was spying on Americans, that the American government at the highest level, with its military and spy apparatus, had completely negated the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, was breaching it and spying on Americans without due process. And the vast preponderance of Americans yawned. They said, I'm sure they're using it to keep me secure. The fact is, of course, they were not using it to keep them secure. And there is no correlation between security and the spy, none. But even if there were, which there isn't, it would be a breach of the Constitution. If you're willing to breach the Constitution, another would be all of the laws infringing on the right to keep and bear arms. But they're not overturned. If you're willing to breach the Constitution, then what?
It's like the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. They're not so much rules as suggestions. They had the pirates' rules, and they kind of bad down. It's like, it's not so much like their laws or rules, more like suggestions. The Constitution's really just a living document. Yeah. It's certainly
and of course,
like
they right, and the suggestions apply when it's in the best the selfish interests of those who are empowered, and they do not apply when that is in the interest of those who are empowered. And the masses, the average individual, doesn't seem to care. And if you don't care that your police is completely out of control, that they're way overarmed, that they're way too aggressive, and that their tendency to dishonesty is the preponderance of their response, and that many thousands of people have been killed and are in jail based upon dishonesty and brutality by the police. If you don't care, then when it happens to you, what right do you have to complain?
Yeah.
And it's going to happen. It's going to happen to more and more people. We're becoming a military state, the largest military in the world, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to differentiate our police, our federal agents, and our military. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Glenn, before you complete the thought that you had started before the commercial break, Scott began to quote a fairly famous summation of what happens when you don't stand up when others are being abused, when their freedoms are being curtailed, when their lives are being snuffed out, thinking, well, it's not happening to me. And by the time that it does happen to you, it's way too late. Scott, could you go ahead and share that?
Yeah, it's a quote by Martin Niemöller. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me.
Right.
And he ended up spending 7-8 years in a Nazi concentration camp, didn't he?
Yes, the last particular individual.
So
yeah, he was an outspoken foe of Adolf Hitler, and he spent the last 7 years of the Nazi regime in a concentration camp.
Yeah.
And when you couple Niemöller, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to say, you know, the situation in America is not all that dissimilar. We have a country now that imprisons more people per capita than any nation on earth by a large margin. In fact, we imprison more people, period, than any nation on earth. And we have one of the most broken judicial systems. We have a judicial system now where if you're accused of terrorism, of which there is no definition of a tactic terrorism, if you're accused of that, you can be locked up, you can even be taken to a foreign prison, you can be tortured for year after year without ever being indicted for a crime, without ever having any evidence brought against you, without ever being tried.
Right. When you couple Niemöller's with the retrospective reflections of Solzhenitsyn, who spent time on the Gulag Archipelago, Solzhenitsyn mm-hmm. ended up in the long term having regrets that they said if we had just hidden in the stairwells and used farm employees, if we had gone against these, you know, tyrants when there was a chance, if they, you know, made them afraid that they would maybe right. might not make it home to their families. You know, Solzhenitsyn, for all his Christian benevolence and, well-meaning, mm-hmm. you know, benevolence to humanity, ended up saying we should have responded to this violently early on, you know, and nip this in the bud. But when you see, and I'm not suggesting violence, I do not think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But it just shows you that when you take a man and you take away everything and imprison him, you know, Niemöller in a camp, Solzhenitsyn on the Gulag Archipelago, and,
right.
you know, and then eventually they say, boy, we should have done something to stop this.
We do come to a point in time where violence seems to be the only moral response. You know, when you're dealing with the hellish behavior of people, when they're being, you know, when America starts torturing, you know, if you're the parent of one of those who was tortured by America, there is no moral person in the world that couldn't understand. By trying to strike vengeance against those who authorized their sons or daughters' torture. I think as parents, we have all been there. But the fact of the matter is that that in the case of both the Soviets and the case of the Nazis, if my numbers are right, I think that both communists represented about 3% of the population of Russia, and the Nazis, who were socialists, represented about 3% of the population of Germany when they took over those countries. So they were a decided minority, but a decided minority with a zeal for their doctrine. If you want to call it a religion or political doctrine or economic doctrine, whatever you want to call it, they were zealous for their belief system. And a 3% zealous, enraged, ruthless minority was able, in both cases, to take over countries when they only represented 3% of the population. Now, I say that at the point they represented 3% of the population, if enough people were motivated to expose and condemn them, to study their internal documents, which are all available publicly, and to expose them and condemn them, as we're trying to do right now on Islam, that it would have been very difficult for them to have prevailed, and that would have been a better response. I don't think violence early on would have prevailed.
Well,
not enough pitchforks.
The crying is the purview of the educated middle class, which is why Pol Pot, you know, got rid of teachers, nurses, and people who wore glasses.
Thanks. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. A lot of truth in that statement.